From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, I spoke to the speaker today on the phone, very cordial, very friendly discussion.
We're very cordial to each other. No ill will, smiles, handshakes.
We are destroying the middle class in Illinois under the leadership of Speaker Madigan and President Cullerton. And they don't want to change because the insiders in government fund them.
Those non-budget issues are functioning in the extreme because they go to core beliefs of people elected to the legislature. People don't come to the legislature to reduce the standard of living.
Speaker Madigan has been the one constant in Illinois politics for more than 30 years. We've been driven into the ditch. You know what? The truth hurts, but you know what? The truth needs to be known.
I think it's an example of functioning in the extreme. It doesn't help the process.
And some back and forth comments from Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan as the legislature goes into what they're calling continuous session. That essentially means they didn't come up with a deal by the end of last weekend and meet the first milestone and have something by the constitutionally mandated end of May. And so we have the state legislature, still no budget deal, and apparently they're polite to each other, but saying they disagree. We'll talk about that and more on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse, joined by Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. At our State House Bureau, Brian Mackey of WUIS and Illinois Issues, Lisa Ryan, Public Affairs Reporting Intern with WUIS, and our guest this week, John O'Connor of the Associated Press. John, welcome to the show.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Well, the Illinois lawmakers were back in session. The Illinois House was back in session this week, and the House and Senate are both back in session next week, I guess. Since we talked last Friday, Brian Mackey, do you want to bring us up to speed? And I guess essentially saying nothing happened, and that brings us up to speed to a degree. But just kind of outline where things stand right now.
Yeah, I think that was exactly what I was going to say. A lot of hot air, but the balloon has not yet left the launch pad. So basically, we had the session ending with kind of a thud, a lot of press conferences, everybody except House Speaker Michael Madigan. We had both Republican legislative leaders, Senate President John Cullerton, and the governor speaking with reporters, leveling accusations at the other side for being obstructionist, basically. You have the governor saying that he doesn't really want to get to fixing the budget question until lawmakers take up his policy agenda, his pro-business policy agenda. And then you have legislative leaders, particularly House Speaker Michael Madigan, saying the budget is the main problem right now. That's what we need to deal with, not these, as he puts it, side issues or ancillary issues.
And the ancillary issues in question are what Rauner has called his turnaround agenda. Lawmakers came back this week in the House and decided, as they called it, was an olive branch with their version of some changes to workers' compensation that they successfully passed through the Illinois House. And Republicans, including the governor, say it's a sham.
Well, the turnaround agenda includes workers' compensation, other changes to the business and political climate, tort reform, you know, civil liability, lawsuit changes, and political changes such as term limits. Now, these are things that Governor Rauner says have to be settled before we can get financial stability. So that's why he's tying them to the budget. The workers' compensation plan is something that the Democrats came back yesterday to talk about. They provided some changes that they say will reduce the cost to businesses of providing this insurance or paying for this insurance to cover injured workers. But the governor says it doesn't go far enough.
So where are we when it comes to these types of issues? Are we seeing people inching closer together? Or are we just people drawing lines in the sand, so to speak, right now? Although they're being nice to each other, the smiles and handshakes.
You know, it occurred to me that both sides say, oh, we need to sit down and negotiate. Well, that's difficult for either of these sides to do, apparently. But what we see is a public airing of negotiations. It seems to me that the Democrats came in and said, this is what we'll put forward in terms of workers' compensation. And the governor says, no, I reject that. Well, that's, you know, we need to sit down and talk about those things. Well, they're doing that publicly. This is, you know, the Democrats saying this is our position. And in some ways, that may be preferable to closed-door meetings between a Republican governor and the Democratic legislative leaders.
I think one of the big problems here, and the reason we don't have a resolution and we have a hard time even foreseeing what a resolution would look like, is the governor and the Democratic leaders do not agree on what the problems are. I mean, the governor says Illinois has been driven into a ditch. He sees the state is in a crisis mode. I mean, you'd think he was describing, you know, the Detroit of the RoboCop movies or something, where, you know, there's people lying in the streets and burned out buildings and everything like that, just from his rhetoric. Democrats, on the other hand, say, you know, no, this is simply a matter of the state's tax structure. We're not getting enough revenue to fund the programs we want. And it's, you know, much more of a gradual fix that they say. And, you know, they say that the governor's, this is the House Speaker's phrase, was core beliefs. The governor is going after what are core beliefs of not only Democrats, but some Republicans, in terms of particularly his anti-union rhetoric and positions that he's advanced, although those are not apparently currently part of his agenda that he's narrowed to, you know, for this month. But he says there's still things he'd like to get eventually. So you have the governor advancing these policies that are, you know, just the opposite of everything that Democrats believe in. And, you know, where do you even find middle ground in that? And I think that's the big difficulty here.
Can you briefly explain the nugget of what it was with the workers' compensation changes that the Illinois House approved this week?
Yeah.
One of the maybe the primary the thing that's easiest to grasp is this idea that Illinois has basically a no-fault workers' compensation law. So if I'm a worker and I'm injured, I don't have to show that it's anyone's fault to be compensated. And what the governor wants is what Speaker Madigan calls the highest standard in the land, which would be that a worker, an injured worker, has to show that the majority, the major contributor to his injury was the work that he does or she does. And so what the Democrats did was they came and they proposed doing away, well, you know, setting aside no fault and putting this so-called causation into the law, that the injury has to be associated with work that the employee is doing. Republicans say, no, that's still the status quo. Causation, you call it causation, but it's still, if he's injured, he just has to show that he is employed, basically, and he can be compensated.
I mean, if we can do a real world example here, one of the arguments I heard discussed was, let's say you have somebody who plays recreational basketball every weekend and they're in their 40s and this is something they just do all the time, evenings, weekends. They get a job for UPS, they work there for 2 weeks and blow their knee out. Right now, they've probably built up that injury over many, many years. But, you know, if it's a no-fault system, they're working at UPS, that's where they injure their knee. Therefore, the company would have to pay for the injury. And I think what the Republicans are saying, the business community is saying, we want to figure out how we can apportion that. So one of the other things the Democrats did here is give, that this legislation would have done, is give businesses the opportunity to try and go back and collect from past employers. So let's say, to carry this same example forward, if the guy had worked at FedEx previously, UPS could go to FedEx and say, we think you should be responsible for 80% of the cost of this industry because most of his working life was spent at this other company. Those are the sort of technical questions about who pays here that are, you know, still trying to be resolved.
Well, the thing about workers' compensation is it's designed to be a no-fault system. When it was put in place roughly 100 years ago, the idea was that if you're injured on the job, you don't have to go and get a lawyer and sue your company. The statute sets out the terms for which your medical expenses will be paid for work-related injury. Your lost wages will be recovered. And if you have a permanent disability, you get paid a certain amount. If you lose your little finger, you get so much. If you lose your thumb, you get a lot more, that kind of stuff. The difficulty is in this causation, trying to determine in the case of an injury that maybe is the result of repetitive stress, who should be responsible for when the injury finally reaches the point that the worker can no longer perform the job. And so that's one of the arguments. Another argument that's made is that the medical community overcharges for the care it provides under workers' compensation compared to other folks who aren't in the workers' compensation situation. And I think there's also some dispute over the choice of doctors. The employer community would like to be able to have a second opinion, if you will. This is a very, very complicated issue, and with all due respect to the governor and the speaker, they are not experts. And the tradition, and I know the governor doesn't like traditions, you know, we're doing something different now, but the tradition in the past has been for the experts to sit down from the business community, from organized labor, work out a compromise, and come up with what was called an agreed bill. And the two sides would say, okay, this is what we settle on. It doesn't make either of us 100% happy, but on the other hand, it moves the ball forward. That would be presented to the General Assembly. Lawmakers would rubber stamp it, the governor would sign it, and that would be that. And that's the way it was for many, many years on things like workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, and it was a system that worked pretty well because the people with most at stake were the ones who were making these decisions, and the people with the most expertise were hashing out these very complex issues.
I asked the question about this legislation. It passed the House. Presumably the Senate will take it up in the coming week. But is it for real? I mean, sure, it's been passed, but do people that are watching say it's more likely this was just a first shot still in some oral negotiations going on, and this isn't really what they'll be doing with.
What I would say from the process is the bill is in a position, it's passed the House, it goes to the Senate, it can be amended in the Senate if there are further negotiations, and if, you know, by some fluke, they would go to the kind of process that I suggested had been the norm in prior years and have some kind of an agreed bill process. That House bill in the Senate could be amended, sent back to the House to concur in the amendment to accept the changes, and it would be on its way to the governor's desk. So that, in my mind, that would be the optimum situation. On the other hand, you could have a situation where the Senate doesn't do anything with the bill and just lets it die.
Yeah, and this is something where you've had both sides now introduce legislation that is not, like Charlie was discussing, part of that agreed bill process. So you have the Democrats have certainly done their fair share of that. This latest workers' compensation package was an example. They've done that with a lot of the other issues on the governor's agenda. And then at the very end of session, the governor introduced a number of his ideas in the Senate. Those were all, or I should say, some of those ideas were given hearings in committee and promptly defeated in committee. So neither side seems to have, you know, kind of come anywhere close to getting these agreed bills out there. But who knows? You know, you never know as time ticks down in summer and that pressure of, you know, different aspects of the state government are going to be shut down. People start not being able to get their driver's license is kind of the most visible example we always use for people interfacing with state government. And then once you get into August, if schools start to not be able to open, then maybe that does start to push things a little bit more towards compromise. But so far, at least in their public rhetoric, both sides seem to be digging in their heels.
Now, the House Speaker and the governor did meet or at least talk on Thursday. Is that correct?
You know, I kind of lose track of which days they said they had cordial conversations. And yes, so, I mean, we're kind of hearing that they're having conversations, but it's not clear to me that how much progress they're really making. We've heard, you know, the governor doesn't really like to characterize those things beyond saying, oh, they're very cordial. We've heard the speaker say sometimes that he gets a lot of the same kind of talking points that the governor delivers to us in the media and in his speeches. So it's not clear to me that those are necessarily productive meetings, but yes, apparently there are still some conversations taking place.
This is State Week in Review. Our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Lisa Ryan, and John O'Connor of the Associated Press. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. On Thursday, the state legislature, the Illinois House, the Democrats did have a dog and pony show, I'll call it, of sorts, where they decided to bring the governor's education point person to task for making $250,000 of a year, and that money coming out of the Department of Human Services budget. And they are kind of turning this into a political issue, and the Republicans say, come on, folks, everybody's done this, and there's a big budget deficit out there. Bring us up to date on this, and Lisa Ryan, you were there for some of that fun.
Yeah, I was at the committee hearing, and it wasn't so much that Beth Purvis is making $250,000. It's where that money is coming from. And it's coming from the Department of Human Services, even though she is labeled the Education Secretary. And Republicans are saying the reason for that is that education is a natural extension of human services, that it's Bruce Rauner's plan to bring people from cradle to grave and have education be a large part of that. So that's why they were saying that they brought in the Department of Human Services budget for it. But Democrats are saying that that's an issue because Bruce Rauner has targeted that department for many cuts, and they're saying that that money could go for other things.
Was this a dog and pony show, John O'Connor?
Well, the Democrats certainly wanted to make a point. And it did not escape the attention of the Rauner administration that past governors, including Rod Blagojevich and Pat Quinn, who were Democrats, did the same thing. They have people working and answering directly to the governor who are paid not from the governor's budget. It's a way to spread out the cost. Rod Blagojevich used to do it routinely, even with lawsuits. He would spread the cost out among all agencies, simply because the idea was, you know, we're all contributing here. Ironically, the Rauner administration, it was pointed out later by a Democrat, one of the reasons they gave for doing this was it's always been done this way, and this is the governor who is shaking things up and wanting to turn around Illinois. So that was part of the response that the speaker, Michael Madigan, the Democrat from Chicago, later called pretty limp.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things that this did expose and did serve to show is the rift between the guy who's one of the governor's top aides, Deputy Chief of Staff for Legislative Affairs, I think. His name is Richard Goldberg. What a just contentious relationship he has going with some of the Democrats. We saw this a little bit in the last week of May when he was testifying before some Senate committees and really almost raising his voice and kind of shouting back and forth with the chairman of that committee, Senator Kwame Raoul. And then also, I mean, Lisa, you were there. You could talk about a little bit of what his attitude was like towards the legislators in this House committee.
Yeah, Representative Lilly actually demanded an apology, which was interesting. And his response was, I apologize if you felt offended. So not necessarily an apology, although they took it, even though it really wasn't him apologizing for his contentious behavior.
Yeah, he's really kind of become an attack dog for the governor among the Democratic legislator in these sort of public settings. It certainly doesn't suggest that there's a conciliatory or constructive relationship, you know, kind of working out the issues and having a nice exchange of ideas, as I believe the speaker characterized his own conversations with the governor. Certainly a little bit of sarcasm there.
And Lisa, the Democrats, are they just polite and nice, or maybe are they contributing to the rancor in this probably partisan committee yesterday?
Well, you could definitely make the claim that Democrats were using this committee as a distraction, or that they were, you know, using it as a way to take away from what the Republicans say is a $4 billion budget hole. They'd say they're using it as a distraction. But both sides are accusing each other of causing a distraction, saying phony things, and basically being a sham. That's the word that was tossed around a lot during this committee, is that they were both just distracting each other from the real issues. So, yes, Democrats were accusing the Republicans, and the Republicans were bringing it right back.
Now I want somebody on the panel to tell me why I should care about this. It seems to me like, as a taxpayer, that tax money's probably paying the person's salary. I don't care which fund it comes out of. Why should I?
Well, I suppose it's a matter of transparency. People who work for the governor and carry out his bidding should be paid out of the governor's fund. So you could argue it that way in a strict fiscal accountability sense. I think part of the difficulty is that Ms. Purvis was being paid or on the payroll of an agency that is facing deep budget cuts and that provides services to the most vulnerable of Illinois citizens. Governors in the past used what back in the day we called ghost payrolling, and now I guess what's the new term, offshoring or something like that. They've used it, but historically, they would not put them in human service-related agencies. They'd stick them in IDOT, the Department of Transportation, or the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. And my guess is that had Purvis's salary be coming out of the Department of Economic Opportunity, nobody would bat an eye. And you could argue that education is more properly aligned with the business development agency, because having an educated workforce is very important in bringing jobs to Illinois. So I think it was the source of the money more than the fact that it was being done that people found offensive. I mean, back in the day, Pat Quinn started as a what we used to call a ghost payroller, working for Dan Walker and being on some other agency's payroll.
Well, as the chairman of the committee, Representative Greg Harris, who is a Democrat, said, this actually could have paid for a year of fully licensed daycare for 29 toddlers. It could have fed 400 kids in daycare for half a year, and it could have housed 12 people with severe mental illnesses through the Bridge Subsidy Program. So like Charlie's saying, when this department is faced with cuts, that's why the public should care.
But so could spending from a Democratic campaign mailer as well. Theoretically, could be used for the same thing.
Except Democratic campaign mailers aren't paid for out of taxpayers' funds.
Correct, yes.
Which makes a difference, in my mind anyway.
And what enabled this controversy to continue was not, according to one of the top Democrats in the House, was not the money or even the source. Deputy Majority Leader Lou Lang, a Democrat from Skokie, then rose on the floor at the end of session yesterday and said, if Mr. Goldberg had just answered, we need to pay her from somewhere, and this was in a convenient place, he says Democrats would have accepted that and the story would have ended. But it was the attitude, and that I found after time spent here in the State House, that was quite unorthodox, that I had never seen, and as Brian mentioned, it happened in some other committees toward the end of session, that the executive branch would respond this way to a co-equal branch of government, and that's what really rankled the Democrats. The Republicans responded, well, it was a sham, so he spoke his mind and spoke the way he should have. And in fact, Patty Bellick, who is she minority spokesman of the committee? She's definitely a leader, a suburban Republican who is a leader on human services. After Lang spoke, said, I didn't find what he said offensive at all. I found that he gave us the answers we were looking for.
Well, with all due respect, I think Republicans are in the position now where they're really scared silly to cross the governor. I can go back again. This is way back in the day, but there was a representative from East St. Louis named Yvetter Young, and she tried to get answers from the Department of Transportation, and some DOT staffers treated her disrespectfully. And the House's response was to tube the Department of Transportation budget at that point. And they just killed the budget bill altogether until apologies were made for the way this elected representative was treated by appointed staffers. So maybe the attitudes have changed over the course of the decades, where people who are basically hired flunkies for the governor no longer have to show respect to people who are elected by the taxpayers.
Well, you can see that I think that the governor, I was just going to add that the governor is setting the tone here, right? I mean, he's, on the one hand, he says, well, I'm having very cordial conversations with House Speaker Madelgan. On the other hand, the speaker has driven the state into a ditch and he is enriching himself. And so, I mean, the governor is portraying the speaker as kind of the embodiment of evil and everything that's wrong with Illinois and Illinois government. And so you can certainly see where his staff maybe feels empowered to carry that message and attitude forward in what they're doing.
The legislature comes back next week. Both chambers are in at least one day next week. What do you anticipate, folks at the State House? What are you seeing for next week's games?
I'm going to go back to the movie Groundhog Day here, where the weatherman, played by Bill Murray, says it's going to be cold, it's going to be dark, and it's going to last you the rest of your lives. I'm not expecting a lot of progress, but who knows? Maybe we'll be surprised by a major breakthrough. I mean, I feel like we're in very uncharted territory here because we have a governor who was elected on the strength of his lack of political experience and not doing things the way they've always been done. And we've certainly seen a lot of that, and I think we're going to continue to see more of that.
In our remaining time, we'll try to get in some notes from the field, and I'll start with John O'Connor of the Associated Press.
Outside of the State House, down the block, a few down the street, a few blocks, is a grand jury, federal grand jury, investigating alleged improper spending by former Congressman Aaron Schock, a Republican from Peoria. On Wednesday, his executive assistant, who handled all the travel vouchers and reimbursements for the congressman in Washington, her name is Sarah Rogers, testified. And she was in the building about 5 hours. Her attorney, Bill Caulfield, who's from Washington, told me that she was not testifying the whole time. She had to wait sometimes in between questioning. But he said she testified truthfully, and he has no concerns about her testifying, that she has nothing to fear from the grand jury. The next day, FBI agents raided Schock's campaign headquarters in Peoria, and we're not sure what they took out. They were seen taking boxes out, but the investigation has been going on several months, and it was strange to see them just now going to that office.
And we'll also get a comment in quickly from Charlie Wheeler for a note from the field.
Okay, well, Professor Fred Geertz at the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs came out with the Flash Index for the month of May. It shows the Illinois economy is continuing to grow at a steady pace, but the Flash Index is down a fraction of a point in May to 106.5 from its reading of 107.1 in April. Anything above 100 is growth, but the professor notes that we are still moving at a very sluggish pace.
That's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Thanks to John O'Connor of the Associated Press for joining us. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.